Today we're going to have a class on the demons that were cast out of the man and into the swine, the various, mainly the two versions, but the various versions or takes on what the demons were. In the majority text, or what we call the popular text, in the second century AD was the Bible, what we have in the Bible in the NIV, ASB, etc., all the newer versions that Westcott and Hort took a hold of to have copyright proprietorship on. But the majority text has a corrupt text. It was compiled by a stoical school in Alexandria, Egypt, around the end of the first century, and compiled the papyri and the corrupt papyri and their own philosophical and poetical bent papyri that they have fabricated to make what we would be bought into as the inspired text, which it is not. Gender has been played with, number has been played with, case has been played with, and it's horrific when you see all of the plays on the inspired word of God, which what we would call the Textus Receptus. The Textus Receptus is Latin for the received text. Received text was the papyri that were bouncing around with the early churches and the disciples and the apostles after Christ, and even probably during the time of Christ. I believe that. So the papyri that we have been received from the text, the inspired text, I believe, has carried through, and such versions as the King James and Geneva Bible and the Tyndale Bible are an offshoot of the Textus Receptus. But once again, you're dealing with English language, not the original Greek. So what we're dealing with today is the problem of the demons that were cast into the swine, as the NIV has the demons as feminine. Well, the interesting thing is that was the bent of the first and second century mind, that demons, if a man was caught up in demons, must have been in the feminine sense, the legium, the sortilegium, the legion, the legion, such as the NIV has it, or should I say has retained it in their text with Dr. Mounts, is in the feminine plural form. Well, what we have here is a corruption of the text. If you go back to the Ante-Nicene Fathers, which were the fathers that wrote before the Catholic Church was formed, the Roman Catholic Church was formed under Constantine in 325 AD, you have a group of men who loved God and had used the received text, or the Textus Receptus. And when you use the Ante-Nicene Fathers texts, you will see that they were quoting out of the papyri that is in agreement with what we have now called the received text. 1 John 5, 7 and 8, if you read the NIV, it will be different than the Textus Receptus. It is completely omitted. This is just one of the cases where they would blatantly take out a verse from the Bible. And this is a long-going argument for anyone who wants to argue the point. I do not. I believe it's set and sealed. The Ante-Nicene Fathers used it, the Textus Receptus, that is. And I stick with that. I believe that is the inspired word, and I believe that we have to use our intellect and our minds and our study principles to find these things if we are to be teachers and leaders of men concerning the Word of God. So, that is my first point. I'm going to start from the corrupt text. which is in Luke chapter 8, verse 30. In the NIV, this is Dr. Mounce's treatment. I love Dr. Mounce. He created so many works, has created so many works on biblical morphology, basics of Greek, one, beyond basics, book two, and this tremendous treatment on the Bible in the Greek. The only problem is that he's using the, I believe, a corrupt text. Do I believe he's a scholar of scholars? Yes, I do. I love the man for his work and his time and his effort. And do I believe he loves the Lord? Yes, I do. He wouldn't have gone this far with his work if he hadn't have, in my personal opinion, and I could be wrong, but it is the text that I'm concerned with here. So I'm not in any way having a diatribe with Dr. Mounce, but the text itself. So this is Luke chapter 8, verse 30, out of Dr. Mounce's NIV, the interlinear. Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" "Legion," he replied, because many demons had gone into him. This is verse 30. Now, this is interlinear translation, and it applies to the English format. So I'm going to read it in the English format. De, or the aspect of subject verb object order, or should I say subject verb and object order? Yes, de ho Jesus epiretisan auton ti estin soi onoma de legion ho epin hoti pala demonai eslethon es auton kai. Okay, so. And Kai is the next verse. Okay. And so we go to the received text, or should I say the Textus Receptus, the proper text. And I'll read it in English, in the King James from this one. And Jesus asked him, saying, "What is thy name?" And he said, "Legion," because many devils were entered into him. Okay. Now this is the non-interlinear Greek text. This is the format of the Greek. And it goes like this. Epiretason de auton ho Jesus legon. Tisoi estin enoma. Ho de hepin legion. Ho ti demonai pola eselthen es auton. Okay, now I want to go back quickly to the corrupt text. Legion in verse 30 is a noun. It's nominative in its case, which means it just states it is. It's a stative noun, if you will. It is singular, and it is feminine. This is the corrupt text. Let's go straight to, and by the way, it was spelled L, or lambda, epsilon, gamma, iota, omega, nu. This is feminine. If it is used in the Greek, it is feminine. But this is a corrupt text. Then we go to the received text, and guess how it's spelled? Lambda, epsilon, gamma, epsilon, omega, nu. The second epsilon is what causes it to be masculine. It is nominative, it's a noun, it is singular, and it is masculine. Let's go back to the corrupt text again. It said, Legion, he replied, because many demons had gone into him. This is the text narrating, Luke is narrating this story, and he is referring to demons in the general sense. That's why he took the neuter sense. So we have noun, nominative, plural, neuter. Okay? And so we go over here to the receptive text, or the Textus Receptus, and we have accusative plural neuter. It's saying to the point. It's saying because this is the why. This is the reason why. We are using a text that I believe holds to the grammar better. It supports the reason why to the antecedent. It's referring to the reason. It is a stronger case for the syntax itself. It indicts itself to be correct, or it indicts anything to be wrong that's not used in the grammatical sense appropriately. This almost is an ashamed approach for the Westcott and Hort's edition, or should I say the majority text. So, going to Purserbacher's book, Dr. Wesley J. Purserbacher's Analytical Greek Lexicon, he parses the Greek in the Textus Receptus. The word diamoniades, delta, alpha, iota, mu, omicron, nu, iota, omicron, omega with the acute mark or the acute diacritical mark over top of it, delta, eta, sigma. This is the only time that the word demon is used in the feminine sense. It is a nominative form. It is singular, not plural. It is feminine, and it is adjectival or an adjective. And we find that in James 3:15. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, and devilish. Let me back up. Out of the same mouth proceeds blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not so to be. Doth a fountain send forth at the same place sweet water and bitter? Can the fig tree, my brethren, bear olive berries, either a vine or figs? So can no fountain both yield salt water and fresh water. Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not, and lie not against the truth. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. For where envying and strife is, there is confusion and every evil work. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace. This epistle was not made to the earthly natural man. It was made to the believer. Only the believer could understand this to begin with. But it is an indictment against us as we speak and exist now. We are dichotomous. We go to and fro, and every evil work comes from this. We have in passage 1 Timothy 6:10, for the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some have coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. This word, ridza, is the word for the root. Ridza, gar, panton, tone, kekon, estin, hey, phalagoria, or phalagoria, ace, tenis, origamenoi, ape, planethesen, apo, tes, pistios, kai, ietos, periperon, odunais, poles. Going back to the beginning, ridza, gar is four, ridza is the word for root. It is feminine. So we have a feminine aspect. We have singular, feminine, noun, nominative. In terms of phalagria, it is the word phalaguria. Phalaguria, hey, or hey, phalaguria, is nominative, singular, feminine, noun. It is the love of money. It is covetousness. It is found, once again, in our verse, 1 Timothy 6, verse 10. Feminine, once again. So we have the acts of evil. They are in the feminine sense. Phalagoria, or phalagria, We have the rhodos, or the root of the thing, is considered feminine, the root of it. Of course, we know the beginning, the creator of all things, is God, but is the root of the natural progression of this phylogria, which is in the feminine sense. It is the feminine clause. Yet the demon was established as itself as nominative masculine, plural, whereas the corrupt text is feminine. We have masculine in the demonic sense. We have the actions and the root of the thing in the feminine sense. Yet it is the first century mindset, second century mindset, that would take hold of this idea and corrupt it to make the feminine form of the demons, which is the natural progression of mythologies, man-made yet God authorized. All things fell under the feminine clause. This is an indictment against first, second century for their mindset as to what a demon was. Yet it is the belief in the masculine text that the devil himself carries on his bloodline. Now, the bloodline, or if you will, the spiritual line, is what it is. It is truly masculine. There is a question posed by many scholars. Was this demon Satan himself? Because only Satan is considered the masculine sense out of this trickle down. Well, that's not necessarily true, because there are many, quote, demons, if you will, that you see in the New Testament as being masculine. Only the adjectival sense do you see a demon being considered feminine, but it is in the actions, as in James 3:15. So it's not confusing if you take time with it, but you have to understand the mode, the function, the source, the authorship, and the engendered action of the thing. And with that said, let's go back to natural progression of man's mythology. Persephone was brought into, she was allured into the pit by looking at the beautiful fruit or fructitiveness of the flowers, the flowering thing. This is a corruption of the Edenic text, where the fruit was taken. We have a Sumerian account where the pomegranate was a symbol of the sexual the testes of man, the enticement of man, and the sexual congress for the many seeds that are in the pomegranate. So the action that Adam and Eve took are secondary, if you will. The primary thing is that they broke the law of God. But in the sense of Persephone, she was allured, in the sense that Eve was, to the fruit, to the flower, and she fell into the pit. She fell into the earthly center. Gaia, the goddess of the earth, who was married to Hades, was coerced by God, the god Hades, to make the pit, make the flowers, to bring her in. The pig's trail was found, the swine's trail was found in the footsteps of Persephone. Persephone resurrected. You see Persephone in the iconic sense as a goddess with the boar's head. She has to go into hell one-third of the year, I believe it is, stay for one-third of the year, and resurrect. She's their dying and resurrecting goddess. So this is the account by the natural progression of man. She is a feminine form. She was seen as the movement of the swine. You could look at her as being a collectiveness of the movement of the swine, the feet, as they go into the pit. She is the fulfillment, if you will, in the Greek mythological sense, of the sacrifice, the goddess to be sacrificed in terms of the Beelzebub, or the Azazel, excuse me, would take the sins on of Israel. Beelzebub would take on the sins of the pagan world. So this is the allusion. This is symbolism. This is natural progression. This is feminine. Once again, it is God who rectifies by saying in the Textus Receptus that the demon was masculine. I believe the demon was real. For what it's worth, I believe it was made up or caught up, if you will, made up by God to fulfill the direct story of action. All other things are a splinter of that. And once things become a splinter of the source and they fall into the category of natural progression, it becomes feminine. It is labeled feminine. And this reflects upon the first and second century mind of the majority text codifiers or the scholars, the stoical scholars, at Alexander, Egypt. They put their moxie on the text, changed the text because they believed so highly in all of the Greek myths and all of the superstitions that it would be more poetical, more sensible to put the feminine aspect. This is an indictment to the movement of the pagan natural progression. They are given over to the woman to have one mind, as in Revelation 13:1. I believe that's also referring to Israel. I do believe that it's referring to Israel to be given over to one mind. But as all things considered, all things are under God. All things move in progression of God, natural and unnatural. That is spiritual. Therefore, you see the authorship of the feminine clause in the movement of the intelligentsia of the second century, first and second century, who would take the text of God and make it into a feminine sense. This is the power of the feminine clause. And as I have tried to be culminative in the feminine logeia discourse that we did not too long ago, I believe that it adds to its strength. It cauterizes its strength, if you will, and it summates the mystery of the woman as that she is truly the feminine clause. She is the powerful thing, so powerful that it would get into the Bible itself. And as we study the white goddess, the Lucea Dea, the feminine case for doctrine, we see that it is bled into the Bible itself and has corrupted the very text that we would use to believe in it. In the English, you do not get this sense because it just says legion. In the text in the Greek is where you find the corruption, and this is the fear, is the root of it. Where is the root of it? Well, once again, the Riza of all evil is in the feminine sense too. So there's another indictment. Even in the root, the word root of evil, you have the feminine clause. It shows you the depth of containment of the feminine clause. The second we get out of masculine doctrine in the Bible, we are already in the feminine clause. You see her washing up on all sides of us, ready to baptize, ready to take in to her logeia. To complete the thought of this class, these swine herders were merchants. They were selling swine. This was in the Palestinian region at the time. This was probably a culture that had moved southeast from Jerusalem. Maybe these people were in full knowledge of the Jewish law at this time, that they had decided to take on the merchandising of the heathen. It was obvious that the man had addressed Jesus as the Son of God. Lord, what would you have to do with me? The addressment of knowing what he is or what it is doing. If the man is caught up in a demon, he surely knows his theology because the demon is in him. If he was not caught up in a demon and he would have said that, it would have shown that he knew exactly who Jesus was. And to know who Jesus is to know who the law is, what the law is, and the history of Israel. So either way, this man had knowledge of Jesus, the law, the power of his casting, the power of the law of the land, and why they were on the other side of the sea doing their merchandising. As we have stated in 1 Timothy, the root of all evil is the love of money. And the word philagria, the root, riza, feminine, they're both. And the actions of such is envying, strivings, fightings. This is found in James 3:15. So we have trickle down of trickle down, which is potential to particular, from the essential, which is God. God is masculine. The text itself, I believe, in its entirety is essential. When I say essential, I mean in its completeness. I've said before, the Bible is its own glossary. It needs no other. It is masculine. It is potentia. It is full. It is a potentate. It is all we need. Therefore, the essential is masculine. The potential, in particular, in all cases of evil, is feminine. It is under Gaia. It is under Logeia. And you see that in its action, even though the addressment of the demon was masculine in its sense. So either way, this man was cutting himself. He was insane, caught up, probably because he knew exactly who Jesus was, and for sure he knew the law of the land, and he was merchandising his swine. Christ cast the demons into the swine and threw them in the pit. This is a prophecy in completeness, if you will, of Persephone, but Persephone is not the point. She is a splintered light or a fraction on the pure essential light of God. It is Christ who summated the act of evil, the root of evil, the loving of money, and the envying, the striving, and the insanity that it causes. To have Jesus Christ on the earth, to know him and to reject him and to do otherwise, would cause any man who is a believer to go insane. I believe that this is the culmination of the movement of Logeia within a man, and concerning the swine, the pigs, the movement of her nature versus the masculinity of the Bible. This is culminative. This brings our case against Logeia to its apogee.